A song without words, a melody from the heart. Three notes form a chord which brings us closer to the Lord. Three simple notes, la, la, la. A trinity of harmony, sing hallelujah. A song without words, a melody from the heart. Three notes form a chord which brings us closer to the Lord.
Before Charles Bush was nominated for a Tony Award for The Tale of the Algis Wife, he was best known for his raucous send-ups of old Hollywood movies, which he both wrote and starred in, plays like Vampire Lesbians of Sodom and Psycho Beach Party. Now he's returned to that form with The Divine Sister, a hilarious spoof of movies with religious themes. The Singing Nun, The Trouble with Angels, Agnes of God, Doubt, and even The Da Vinci Code, just naming a few. It's on stage at the Soho Playhouse and on Van Damme Street, and I'm very pleased that it brings Mr. Bush and one of his wonderful co-stars, Julie Halston, to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Charles, you've written a number of more traditional plays in recent years, like The Tale of the Algis Wife and Our Leading Lady, which you didn't act in. Do you feel left out when there's no role for you in one of your own plays?
Oh, it's very difficult. Particularly, it's awful when you have to to sit in the audience or use the restroom during intermission and people don't know who you are and they say awful things.
They didn't say awful things during those productions, did they?
No, actually one time, this is a bit vulgaire, but I remember during The Algis Wife, it starred Michelle Lee and Linda Lavin. And
Linda Lavin came on the show to talk about it.
And I was in the men's room during intermission. These two old men were standing at the urinal and one said, "Oh, that Michelle Lee is still a very attractive lady."
Well, you see, the critics don't say those things in their reviews, do they?
No.
Do you find that getting a Tony nomination for Best Play has given you more credibility, and are you going to undermine that credibility with this?
Well, I remember John Simon really liked The Algis Wife. It had never liked me before, and I ran into him in passing at some radio show, and he said, "Oh, so now you're a reformed character. Yeah, we should have dinner sometime." I said, "Well, you never know when I'll slip."
And you've slipped.
I've slipped very far. This is that bawdy, outrageous play that we're doing, and I've taken my muse, Julie Halston, down a wacky, grotesque path.
Oh, I tell you, the humiliations that have been heaped upon me in this play, I'm telling you. But you know, it's comedy gold.
Well, you've worked with Charles. You've done a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Broadway, off-Broadway, film, TV. Many people will remember you as Bitsy Von Muffling from Sex and the City.
Yes. I was actually recognized in Turkey as Bitsy Von Muffling.
Really?
Which was fantastic. First of all, there's a big gay contingent in Istanbul. Who knew? And people said, "Bitsy, Bitsy, Bitsy." You know, it was very funny. And I had to sign autographs in a restaurant.
Well, in all of those things, had you ever worn a habit before?
No, and I always wanted to. Charles and I have been obsessed with the saints, the lives of the saints, and anything religious for years now. We joke about it, because I'm a lapsed Catholic, desperate to be a Jew, and he's a Jewish.
Did you go to parochial school?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Christ the King and Holy Family.
But she's always been obsessed with the Jews.
And I'm obsessed with Jews. And he was a Jewish boy obsessed with King of Kings and the greatest story ever told. So it was a great fit.
Well, was it the nun movies? There have been so many movies about nuns.
Well,
I
wasn't raised with any kind of religion at all or a religious background, and so consequently, just watching the old movies, anything with spirituality or fake Hollywood reverence just slayed me. Just as soon as the heavenly music comes on and the light from above and. I just adored it. Ben-Hur, when the mother and sister are lepers, then suddenly get healed and their false eyelashes come back on. It's to die for.
Yeah, the Virgin Mother was wearing Max Factor red.
When Song of Bernadette, the Virgin
Linda
Mary
Darnell.
Put Linda Darnell looking every bit as gorgeous as possible.
Absolutely.
Well, everybody, all the women in this production have false eyelashes as well. And
I'm wearing them now. Okay. I wake up with false eyelashes.
We're nuns in the traditional habit, but with makeup for Technicolor.
Yeah. I was just speaking to Cherry Jones, who, of course, played a nun in Doubt. Yeah. She said she loved working in The Habit.
She had such an unattractive habit. Ours are very glamorous. She was wearing those little strange little bonnets, and we're in the very traditional kind of medieval long flowing robes.
Where do you get the? Do you have to have them made, or is there a costume
place?
Well,
I tell you, this is really kind of a beautiful
divine story.
Story is Danny Goggin, who's the creator of the show Nonsense. I've kind of known a bit over the years, but not that well, but for, you know, oh gosh, 25 years. And he heard that we were doing this play, and he Facebook friended me and said, is there any way I can help? And he donated all the nuns' habits.
Wow.
And wouldn't even let me pay for the FedEx. Isn't that something?
It was fantastic. And what we have found is that, first of all, as we're getting a little older, the habit covers a multitude of sins. And, you know, that nice sort of wimple and the chin is the lines are a little better. It's kind of a nice, it's kind of a flattering thing.
I think the nuns did themselves a terrible disservice when they got modernized, because it's really immediately, no matter what you look like, you get this aura of lovely serenity.
What about costume changes? There are a lot of quick costume changes.
Yes, it's
easy to get in and out of them.
Well, I have a phenomenal dresser, James Steele, who's, I can't get on stage without him. But it is a lot because I'm always underdressing and overdressing under the habit, you know, because I don't want to reveal too much, but, you know, we
do play other parts.
We flashback.
Yeah, that's one of the things I did feel that, you know, here we were playing these nuns in this play, and I thought, well, we got to give the audience a little something, a little break from the black and white habit. So we do have a flashback to when Julie and I were gal reporters in Chicago.
How many other plays have the two of you worked in together?
Oh, we've tried to figure this out because we've done a film together. We did a short film together. He's written at least 10 roles for me.
The first one I remember is Vampire Lesbians of Sodom,
right?
Which got a lot of recognition. And,
yeah,
and that started
years.
As a kind of a lark, didn't it? Mm-hmm. A skit that you put on
for a weekend.
East Village Bar?
A weekend. And I thought, oh, it's not like I'm going to be a female impersonator. This would be sort of fun to do for the weekend. Let that be a lesson to you all.
That was the first time you did drag? When you were in college, when you were studying at Northwestern, was it?
Oh, yeah, I did. I wrote a play where I played a female character in college. And then in Chicago, I did a little bit of a couple plays in drag, but I hadn't done it for years. And my career for about 6 years was as a solo performer and just dressed as myself. But then, yeah, we went down to this little place called the Limbo Lounge on Avenue C, you know, in a time when Alphabet City really was just only the mentally deranged would venture there. And I went to see a friend do their act at this strange art gallery performance-based after-hours bar. And I was just so completely enthralled by the whole kind of decadent Berlin in the 20s punk atmosphere. So I, on the spot, asked the young guy who was the owner if he would book me for a weekend, and he found one. And a couple of weeks later, and so I quickly wrote this kind of sketch, just for basically have lines to say. And Julie was in it, and we just had a wonderful time. And then we just kept doing more and more and more. And then eventually, this little sketch, Vampire Lesbians, we actually moved off Broadway to a real theater, and it became a hit and ran 5 years.
Provincetown Playhouse.
Yeah.
But that was a real play. Would you have to do it the same lines every night?
Yes.
Is there a certain amount of collaboration with the actors, or do you just write out a full script and say and give them
directions? Just writes. He knows who he wants to write for, and he writes for us. I mean, we're such close friends at this point. We can finish each other's sentences a lot. And he knows how to write for me so well. You know, a lot of people would hear my voice and go, oh, God, she's a menace to society. Get her out of here. And he decided, oh, that voice is going to be comedy gold. And he knows my rhythms. And what is fascinating, and I was explaining this to someone recently, whenever we start a new play, I read my part, and I never know how to do the line readings. I'm not good with my own voice. So Charles has to do me, and then he tells me how to do me. and then I do me.
I know. It's a crazy thing. And each time I said, she's doing it, I said, what the hell is she doing? I said, Julie, no. And I talk about her in the third person, too. I said, no. Julie will read the line like this. She'll talk about my father. That's how you do it. And she's, oh, okay. Yeah. And she, you know, she has no, she really is, for an actress, she is so amazingly little ego and vanity. And so, you know, you can tell her like things that you could never say to another actress. And like if she goes too far, you know, we'll say, honey, you're doing a 9, do a 7.5.
True. And you know, it is funny because so many, you know, performers, you will not give them a line reading. You just can't do that. I am the complete opposite, particularly with comedy, because comedy is mathematical and it is about rhythm. You know, if I'm not getting something right, I just say, honey, what do you want? Mm-hmm. You imitate it, and then I'll do it.
But I'm amazed that Charles ever said 7.5, because this play is definitely at 9.
Yes.
11.
Yes.
I mean, part of the fun is that everybody is on the verge of over the top.
Yeah, and it's an exhausting play.
It's exhausting?
I don't know what possessed me. I thought
it started as a skit in the same way.
Oh, no, not at all.
It didn't. No.
It just what happened was just that I was feeling a little burnt out and I was just feeling a little bit like I was losing some of the joy of just performing. And so I wrote this play, The Divine Sister, almost as therapy, just to do something that was just going to be fun. And I wrote it for a group of people that I wanted to hang out with. And Carl Andrus, our director, who's my closest friend, said, well, let's just do it. And we found a theater for the New City, which is a wonderful, very free kind of place in the East Village. Let us do the show there. We did 24 performances and invited no critics. And it was just to have the fun of it. And it wasn't even a workshop to, you know, with a future agenda. It was just as an end in itself. And we had a great time, and we sold out just through the internet and Facebook, et cetera. And,
word of mouth.
And then Daryl Roth, who's, you know, a wonderful producer, who's been a great supporter of mine for the past decade, loved it and said, well, let's do a commercial production. So that's where we are now. But the play was, you know, always a play.
And The Divine Sister is at the Soho Playhouse, starring Charles Bush, who also wrote it, and also Julie Halston, who is here, along with Alison Fraser, Amy Rutberg, Jennifer Van Dyke, Jonathan Walker. Mm-hmm. Often you feel, after you've come out of some play, well, so-and-so was better than somebody else. This is an all-star cast. I mean, everybody seems to be working perfectly with
everybody
else.
Yes, you know,
it's
so lovely, too. You know, I shouldn't be boasting, but we got just rave reviews, you know, across the board.
Oh, it's very funny.
You know, the New York Times down to the, you know, D'Agostino Supermarket Gazette, you know. And and what's been so lovely, thank God, is that everybody in our cast in every review has been singled out. Because sometimes, you know, you can get a great review and then they leave the one person out or dislike one person. Oh, is that awful? And you have to get back to the dressing room the next day.
And what's so great is that Jonathan and Jennifer are married in real life. So they're actually working together, which is great because they don't get a chance to work together a lot. And we all live in the same building, believe it or not. So it's so fun because I'm actually performing with my friends and my neighbors, and we all go to the theater together and go. It's really quite an amazing situation.
So have they all worked with you before too, Charles?
Yeah, I've worked with everyone in this cast. Yeah.
Alison is hilarious as a German nun and an Irish cleaning lady. And they didn't have any hand in creating any of these parts?
Nope. I write them and they act them.
There are references to just about every nun movie ever made in this play. In addition to the singing nun and Trouble with Angels, you've got The Song of Bernadette, The Sound of Music, The Bells of St. Mary's. Yeah. And those are just the old ones. Also, The Da Vinci Code, Doubt, Agnes of God.
Right. Cover the Waterfront.
Yeah, so have people who haven't seen them, do you think that they're missing something? Because there are some pretty clever references.
Well, I think if you have an affection for or knowledge of these movies, it certainly might add to your enjoyment. But I really try to be careful and not make it some kind of elitist thing, because I think that just becomes very insular. So I think I like to believe that a great majority of the comedy is just outrageous in its own way.
So people don't have to pick up the references, but if they do, that's even more fun.
Yeah, but that would make it such a elitist kind of entertainment.
Well, for example, the Mother Superior you play, is she based on any particular movie? None. I was thinking of Rosalind Russell in The Trouble with Angels.
The whole show, in a way, is a tribute to Rosalind Russell's career.
Because she used to be a girl reporter, and Rosalind Russell was in His Girl Friday.
Exactly. And there's a couple of references to Auntie Mame in it as well.
And there is a lot of plot here.
I love a good story. We don't get that too often, do we?
Loves plot. That's what we love.
You want to give us a brief synopsis?
Twists and turns and revelations and
Yes, and all the nuns sort of have a secret. This is a secret life of nuns, and we all have our own secrets, and they're all very dramatic events. And the thing that's so great about Charles and why he's such a terrific playwright is that it really is based on very, very real emotions. It's a very epic situations. Again, I don't want to reveal too much, but you know, there's real genuine pathos usually because it involves maybe certain family members or whatnot, and so that's what I think the audience also responds to. My husband doesn't know any of those references that you just talked about. You know, he loves these shows just because they're flat out funny, but also they have a lot of heart. They do have a lot of heart, and I think that's something people really respond to.
There are a lot of mother-daughter relationships, considering the fact that we're talking about nuns. The play takes place in 1966. Was that a particularly good year for nun movies?
Trouble with Angels and I think The Singing Nun were both.
They both came out.
Give or take a year.
It also gives you a chance to say things like, we're living in a time of great social change. We must do everything in our power to stop it.
Well, my mother superior is a very conservative, old school nun, and it's fun with playing with just her responses.
And Julie, your sister Acacius is mistress of the novices, but also the wrestling coach.
Yes, well, you know, those nun movies, particularly Trouble with Angels. You know, there is always those nuns like Mary Wicks. You know, they wear a lot of sneakers, they blow a lot of whistles, they're always trying to have a tournament. You know, they're always wrangling the kids, and I love those characters. And Charles is, you know, so skilled. He knows how to weave all those characters with a great mystery.
But then you sort of start out as Mary Wicks, and then turn into Gladys Cooper in the Song of Bernadette. It was rather terrifying. And then you also morph into the crazy nun and Black Narcissus.
Yeah. Yes.
There's also, unlike Black Narcissus, which is one of the best movies ever made about nuns, I think.
Most beautiful movies
ever made. And my great thrill was that Michael Powell was a guest on the show once.
Whoa.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah. There's also music. And are these original songs?
Yes. Wonderful composer Lewis Flynn wrote the music, and I wrote the lyrics. We needed a song because we wanted to have a little bit of a, you know, Sound of Music or The Singing Nun, and we wanted an original song that evoked both, you know, Dominique and Nika and maybe Do Re Mi. So Lewis and I wrote this song, Trinity of Harmony, and it's cute. It's a cute mm-hmm. song.
It sounds like it could have been from one of those.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Allison keeps asking. She wants, you know, some punk rocker to do it and cover it, but we think it really is perfect.
The play takes place in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh because you think that's funny?
Yeah. What's it to you? Yeah. Well, yeah, poor Pittsburgh, you know, it really has kind of a bad rep. But it's really a lovely city. Have you been there much?
I have been to Pittsburgh.
I like Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Have you
but
played
it does
Pittsburgh,
like,
too?
I played Pittsburgh. I did. I played
It does
Pittsburgh.
Feel like a city in decline.
Well, not
it's anymore.
Not anymore. It's really, really coming up. I got to tell you, with the Andy Warhol Museum and all the convention centers, which is what I've played those convention centers. They're marvelous, and they have a lot of corporate things going on there. What can I say? I like Pittsburgh. I like it.
Yeah, no, it's okay. But it used to have a terrible reputation because of all the coal mines. And I remember my aunt said that she was taking the train across country in the 40s, and when she got off at Pittsburgh, within an hour, her white collars had turned black.
Oh. So,
but they've changed all that.
Yes.
Yeah, but it sounds like it has a
it
funny
would be a
ring.
Problem for a nun.
Yes, can you imagine? But yeah, it has a funny ring to it. Pittsburgh, 1966, and even sounds slightly sinister.
So when I'm assuming every night you get laughs in different places. Or is this a play where you kind of know?
We kind of know. I mean, you know, again, he's such a skilled playwright. We he knows how to land jokes. But there are times there are surprises. Sometimes an audience will be a little bit of ahead of a joke. So we'll start hearing the rumblings of laughter before the joke actually lands. Other times it's a delayed laugh. But most of the time, wouldn't you say it's pretty consistent?
Yes. But, you know, it is fascinating. The more you do it, the longer you act, every audience has its own personality. And you have to really just accustom yourself to it. And actors, you know, we're a peculiar lot. You know, we think while we're on stage that we know the whole composition of the audience. Oh, tonight's very gay, or tonight's very straight, or tonight's very old. No, tonight's very young. And we don't know. We have no idea. You know, and then when it's over, and sometimes in the curtain call, the lights go up more, and you actually see them. We're completely all wet. You know, it's just don't listen to any actor. Yeah. So, you know, the other night we actually, or when it was a Sunday, it was rather quiet audience for us in a way. And yet the play supports it because there's, you know, it's a melodrama. And so you could actually just enjoy it in a way as the movie and not necessarily a spoof of a movie. And we thought, oh, we don't think they like us very much. And then the lights came up for the curtain call, and oh, they were...
Oh, people were standing.
Standing. So, you know, you just don't listen to actors.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
I say it because I am one.
That's
it's the only way
true.
I can get away
but
with
it's
it.
It's also a very intimate theater, and I'm sure that helps to some degree because the audience feels so close to all the action.
Well, what's also great is that there's a great deal of affection in New York City, and I think particularly downtown, for Charles Bush.
And I want to thank you both for being here. Charles Bush, who stars in his own play, The Divine Sister, along with Julie Helston, who's also been here, and Allison Fraser, Amy Rutberg, Jennifer Van Dyke, Jonathan Walker. It's at the Soho Playhouse, which is on Van Damme, just around the corner from our studios.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lennon.
It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you.